This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we have a very interesting program in store for you because we're going to be talking to America's foremost integrative gastroenterologist. He's been a guest before here on Intelligent Medicine and on the previous incarnation of this program, which is called Health Talk. He's the go-to guy when it comes to integrative gastroenterology. In fact, he was chosen by none other than Dr. Andrew Weil to serve as senior editor for the first book for physicians on integrative gastroenterology, which is released in 2011. It's a book for health professionals and for true aficionados of the science. But he's written several popular books, including The Inside Tract. We've talked to him about that book. Also, The Good Gut Diet. He has a new book, which is fantastic, just out or about to be out, but pre-orders are available on the website, The Gut Balance Revolution. Dr. Mullen's an associate professor of medicine at the Johns Hopkins Hospital. He's board certified in internal medicine and gastroenterology, which makes him kind of unique because he is one of a very small number of board certified gastroenterologists who is true blue integrative in his approach. And he has a wonderful website at thefoodmd.com. He's got some great information there, some blogs and information about his books and his media appearances, which are frequent, radio, TV, and in print. And so without further ado, here's my good colleague, Dr. Jerry Mullen. Jerry, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. Thank you very much for the kind introduction.
Well, it's a heartfelt introduction, and I've learned a lot from you and, you know, from your books and from your lectures. I'm a big fan. The new book is billed as the three-phase, scientifically proven, step-by-step plan to flip the switch that reshapes your body by transforming your digestive system into a fat-melting machine. Now, that's a whole new view of the power of the microbiome, you know, what that collection of billions and trillions of organisms inside us and the influence that it has in our body. So give us the pitch. How is that justified?
You know, it's a very interesting way of putting it together, Ron. Let me first say that for centuries and centuries that traditional medicines such as Ayurvedic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine and systems like that, that still are ritually used by practitioners throughout the world, the premise of the practice is that the gut is the center and core of the bodily functions, and that if you want to fix somebody, you better fix the gut first, okay? And in Western medicine, as it evolved, a more functional branch of medicine and naturopathic medicine used the very same rubric. So many people throughout the world are treated by this tenet that the gut really is the control station for the body. Now, for the last five or so years since the Human Microbiome Project, those traditions really became validated and confirmed scientifically. Because now that we're able to characterize the gut microbiome, you see, after the the Cell Biome Project, where we mapped the genome, for humans, then we use the similar technology to really map out the human microbiome when culture did not really do a good job because many of these good bugs and bad bugs cannot be cultured. We're able to now know what's in their gut and know what they do, and that has allowed this revolution to occur in science where we now know that the gut bugs really control many aspects of our being, which includes behaviors, thoughts, anxiety, depression, autism, the brain itself, is one of the major influence, the bugs are major influencers of brain and behavior. So that explosion in the data has led us to know that these gut bugs help control our body physiology, and there's many aspects of physiology regarding metabolism and weight regulation that are actually controlled and influenced by these microorganisms in the gut.
Well, in your book, you enumerate several lines of evidence that suggests that changes in the microbiome can alter the metabolism, either for good or for bad. So summarize some of those. What are some of the lines of evidence, you know, animal experimentation from experience with humans that suggest that that may be the case?
Well, what's interesting in animal experiments that we know that in a genetic model of obesity, that the microbiome of their stool is clearly altered. And actually, it's less biodiverse. We talk about biodiversity of ecosystems like the Amazon rainforest, that the more richer the ecosystem, the healthier it is. So the more biodiverse it is, the richer that ecosystem is. And the same is true in the gut. But when you genetically program mice to be obese, their microbiome is certainly abnormal. And if you take the stool from one of these fat rats, no pun intended, and put it into a normal genetic rat, that'll become obese. So you can actually transfect the obesity from mice to mice or rat to rat just by taking their stool or their microbiome and transplanting it. So we know that type of experimentation, that the stool itself and even the bacteria, which other experiments showed, is that the bacteria actually can transform an individual genetically normal into one that's obese.
There are also some lines of evidence from gastric bypass surgery. At first, it was thought that gastric bypass surgery worked because it shrank the stomach or because it caused malabsorption. There wasn't as much absorption of food. But there's now some new evidence that by creating this unnatural loop in the bowel, that you actually change the bacteria, and thus you may alter the microbiome. That may be at least part of the way that people lose weight.
So what happens, and that's a very, very good point, a couple of points to raise in that aspect. One is the fact that what you see immediately post-gastric bypass, Dr. Hoffman, is that you see the insulin sensitivity change almost immediately. When you see the gut organisms transform and become more biodiverse within the first 2 or 3 days after gastric bypass surgery, you also see changes in the insulin sensitivity, the blood glucose, and the metabolism before you even have a chance for the fact that that bypass is going to start malabsorbing and working on a physiological level. So we know that this switch in the microorganisms by the bypass surgery is part of the process. In fact, if you give those people who have gastric bypass surgery probiotics, it actually facilitates their weight loss.
Wow, it's like a hamburger helper for the bypass. It works even better.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
That's great. So that would be a truly integrative approach. But is it conceivable that through some of the techniques that you suggest in your book, that we can kind of bypass, that we can undertake a natural reboot of the organisms in the gastrointestinal tract to reverse metabolic inefficiency?
Yes, and I'm a fan, as you probably read in the book, of more fermented foods and prebiotic foods rather than just probiotics themselves. But I think the probiotic data really shows us the power of the microorganisms in the gut. And I really like to promote functional foods that actually either give the microorganisms or feed their friendly flora to do their job.
So the holy grail, of course, of probiotic research, because whoever comes up with this is going to make billions, is to come up with that one unique organism that helps people shed pounds. Do you think that that's an attainable goal, or is it more, shaping the microbiome, the pattern of the species, and it's more complicated than just taking a pill?
Well, I think it is more complicated than that. There was an article by Erica Fry a week ago. Her and I spoke about it in Fortune magazine. And in there, they talked about how certain businesses, they highlighted Dana, but there's businesses that are quote-unquote banking on at least marketing that claim. And they're mainly food companies. So I think it's going to be through food that people are going to have that effect. A probiotic that's a home run, you're going to find probiotics to have some benefit, likely because you're just kind of throwing all kinds of bacteria at people, and some of them will stick. Some of them may work. But I think the future, not to promote fecal transplantation, I think in personalized medicine, in the future, somebody will have a characterized microbiome that's individual to them, and they will have certain abnormalities from a metabolic function that'll be translatable, and then they will be either fed or their microbiome can be manipulated in a way so it resolves in terms of a more fat-burning function. Now, with the book, I mean, the idea there is, not to promote a very expensive, going to a company and getting analysis and so on and so forth, is like the people who have weight problems, diabetes, so on and so forth, they all have, and it's been shown in meta-analysis, they do have what they call dysbiosis or an abnormal colonization of their gut. And there's numerous studies that if you tweak and adjust that microbiome and make it more robust and biodiverse, their insulin requirements go down and they start to lose weight.
So there's a practical lifestyle approach to this rather than using a magic bullet in a pill that has not even been yet invented. I mean, some people talking about Lactobacillus gasseri, if I get the pronunciation correctly, that may be a candidate organism for this. But, sometimes it turns out that different strokes for different folks, that some people respond and some people are non-responders. I always find that with probiotics, that some people get great results with one or another probiotic. Other people seem to be intolerant or it doesn't help.
With that particular organism, Ron, Lactobacillus gasseri, is that is the one that they used in that gastric bypass study. Uh-huh. And in fact, those people had SIBO or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth because after gastric bypass surgery, there is a stagnant afferent loop.
Right. It creates SIBO, anatomically, right?
Yeah, it can create SIBO. And those who had symptoms got treated with the Lactobacillus gasseri. It improved, if not cured, their SIBO, and they lost weight. In fact, that's the kind of thing that led me to discover this book, because an inside track, I started treating people for SIBO, and those people who were overweight and could not lose weight before, they started to shed weight.
Just
a
quick definition.
They were not restricting. What's that?
A quick definition of SIBO for some of our listeners. We've done entire programs on the subject of SIBO, but go ahead. I'm sorry, we just got a little ahead of ourselves.
Well, the gut, the upper part of the gut is relatively sterile. And particularly the small bowel, you have no more than 10,000 organisms per mil and all around. And basically, when you start to have an overgrowth of those organisms and they become more anaerobic, you start to rapidly ferment your food and you get gas and bloating and cramping and diarrhea and so on and so forth. So what we try to do is try to kind of tone down the bacterial count in a number of ways with herbs perhaps or antibacterials, but basically if you change the foods and shift down and give less fermentable foods acutely, then that SIBO will help resolve and improve. There's a lot of studies on what they call FODMAPs or these highly fermentable food groups. So in track two of my inside tract, as we discussed in 2011, when that was way ahead of its time and now FODMAPs are commonly used, is that when we start giving people these FODMAPs who were otherwise overweight just to tone down their irritable bowel, and they were not calorie restricted, they started to burn fat. And the reason why is because we were shifting their biome to a more favorable mix.
Right. So it's a shift rather than, find a bug, use a drug, eradicating. We can't kill off the bacteria, because then you'll kill off the good ones along with the bad ones.
You'll get, unless someone's really sick because they're really teeming with the bacteria in that place and that causes malabsorption and they're having a wasting syndrome. It's something you don't want to do for everybody, but unfortunately that's the gold standard. And, everybody has a different approach to that, but mine's a little bit unconventional in that regard, yes.
Right. Well, there's a medication, as you know, Xifaxan, which is commonly used. Other people often use diet modification, the FODMAPs diet, along with botanicals of various kinds, probiotics and so on. And you're probably in the latter category, although you'll use medication when forced to. It seems that there's the right kind of fiber that supports healthy bacterial growth, the right kinds of foods. And you actually point this out very nicely in your book. What are some of the foods that are good prebiotics that help to restore balance?
That's a very good, point. I like recommending to people, I know fruits and vegetables in general have soluble fibers which help really grow and become fertilizer for these good gut microbes. And some of the ones that are particularly prebiotic includes asparagus.
Oh, yeah.
Asparagus, and this is the season for it. Bananas, and not too ripe, maybe not too green, but bananas, because they have resistant starches, and those really get, and they're rich in fructooligosaccharides and inulin, and these things ultimately get turned into prebiotic fibers, which are highly fermentable by bifidobacteria and good gut bacteria, which actually help burn fat. So Jerusalem artichokes, for example, also were high in that. Onions, but the problem, as you pointed out with onions, is the fact that it's a FODMAP.
Yeah.
So as much as that's going to be great to grow a good, ecosystem, if you do it while you got SIBO, you're not going to be too happy.
So it's almost like a kind of the Goldilocks principle, like, too little, too much, just right. Some people may be overzealous about fiber. They have a lot of gastrointestinal symptoms, gas, bloating, distension. Other people, they're not getting enough fiber. They're constipated. Their stool is hard. And they have a lack of the proper bacterial diversity and maybe are susceptible to degenerative diseases, insulin resistance.
Yes, all of the above.
Right.
And it's not the kind of thing, like you mentioned before, you just throw probiotics at people and, you think that's going to be a magic bullet. I think we got to move away from magic bullet medicine. I spoke about this in an op-ed in The Hill a few months ago because of the New York State, Attorney General's action, and I spoke a little bit about it. But I think, you and I are very much food as medicine people and into natural healing and so on and so forth. But the mistake some people do, and you and I believe that there's a place for supplements and they work for people, but when we have people try to substitute, whether it's medication or even supplements for sound diet, lifestyle modification, so on and so forth, there's no substitute for sleep. There's no substitute, for mindfulness. There's no substitute for a good diet. And no matter how much medication or vitamins you throw at somebody, if they're really wrecking themselves otherwise, it ain't going to work.
An important corollary to the principles in the Gut Balance Revolution, new book, which is that you can actually modify your diet to help facilitate weight loss, is that you can screw things up with the wrong kind of diet and the wrong kinds of foods, and that's what may be making Americans fat. There's a whole new line of research, which I'm sure you're well aware of, looking at these artificial sweeteners, which at first it was thought, this is going to be a great way for people to lose weight. You can guzzle this stuff and there's not a single calorie. You can satisfy your sweet craving and thereby you get rid of 3 or 4 cans of sugary beverage a day. You're going to lose weight like crazy. But then they discovered to their dismay that people weren't losing weight. And they said, oh, maybe these things kindle sweet craving because they're sweet tasting and they just don't deliver the actual sugar. So people look for sugar elsewhere. Now it turns out it may have something to do with the microbiome, right? Can you explain that?
So what they've done, and I don't remember if it's Cell or Nature, where this was published for PNAS, but it was a highly scientific journal. And what they did, it was very elegant, is that they found that these artificial sweeteners, such as NutraSweet, they, I wouldn't use the word wreck the microbiome, but they cause a disruption of the microbiome, making it more pathogenic. And they also reduce the biodiversity of the ecosystem. So they turn your thriving inner garden into a cesspool. And that in itself causes disruption in your insulin sensitivity, which can lead to diabetes. So what they're finding is that the NutraSweet that they're given to substitute for sugar in fear that's going to induce diabetes, they're given the diabetes by giving the NutraSweet.
Yeah, that's crazy. But it's, you know, the law of unintended consequences. But then think of all the other synthetic garbage substances that we introduce into our food supply. And you know, no wonder that our bacteria are not thriving. It's a little, you know, if you were growing a garden, you wouldn't be thinking of putting, you know, crankcase oil on your garden or, you know, throwing out, you know, a pail of Lysol on your plants. And that is in effect what we're doing to our gastrointestinal tracts on a daily basis with the things we ingest.
Yes, if you have an hour, we can talk about antibiotics, but I guess I'll wait for you because I know you're going to ask me about antibiotics.
No, this is a good point at which to pause because we generally divide these podcasts into two parts. You jump the shark here because I definitely want to ask you about that and about some new evidence, and all this evidence is just coming in. Your book is very prescient because this evidence is coming fast and furious, and now it's in the popular press. About the relationship between antibiotic use and overweight. We'll tackle that in part two, so listeners, stay with us. This is part one of today's interview with Dr. Gerard Mullen. He's author of a great new book, The Gut Balance Revolution. He's got an excellent website at thefoodmd.com. And in part two, we'll tackle the antibiotic connection. And also, I want you to comment on the calorie myth, because in the Gut Balance Revolution, you tackle that, and there's more to say on that subject. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.